Monster Man, Episode 517, Esperweed and Flailer. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are continuing our journey through the monsters of Athas, the post-apocalyptic fantasy world that is home to the Dark Sun campaign setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. But before we do that, it's time to take care of some business. First and most importantly, we gotta thank a new Patreon backer. Yes, this is someone who has gone to patreon.com/monstermane, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's backer, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to every episode of my other podcast, Patron Deities. So thank you very much, Joe Bob Briggs. Now, Mr. Briggs, can I call you Joe Bob? I feel like that's probably an alias, but if not, gosh, a celebrity patron. All joking aside, Joe Bob, thank you very much for your support. It means a lot to me. Also, as you may have heard in my special announcement, the Tome of Tombs, my latest RPG zine, is on Kickstarter. There's a link down in the show notes. I'd appreciate it if you'd go and check it out if you think that's something you might enjoy. If you've got a friend who might enjoy it, why not tell them about it? All right, with the business out of the way, let's talk monsters. First up, we have the Esperweed. This rare plant provides a temporary boost to psychic powers. I mentioned it in last week's episode when we talked about the Erdland, which gains its psychic powers from feeding on the Esperweed. However, repeated use of the Esperweed can have harmful side effects, actually reducing the individual's psionic capabilities. So you get a very temporary boost of power, but actually over time, you start to get weaker. You can use Esperweed a number of times equal to your HD or level safely before this starts to happen. I guess the Erdland, not being psychic in the first place, is basically immune to this side effect. But you might have trouble getting up to that number, honestly, since the Esperweed is pretty rare. It grows in the tropical regions of the Ringing Mountains, one of the few areas of lush greenery left on Athas, and occasionally the winds, which also cause sandstorms, right, which we have talked about previously, there being sandstorms on Athas. But so the wind will carry seeds from the Ringing Mountains all over the landscape, but most of these places are too arid for the Esperweed to flourish. One exception is the Silt Sea. The damp soil here, together with the high temperatures, create the ideal environment for the Esperweed to flourish, but it's rare that a seed blows this far, so there isn't much Esperweed there. So I do like the Esperweed. I like the idea of a rare plant as a kind of treasure, which makes sense in Athas, where valuable plants are typically rare and sought after because most of Athas doesn't have very much vegetation. It also connects to the environmental stuff. It connects to the psionic stuff. So in that sense, it's very Athasian. It's not a plant that would make a lot of sense in another D&D setting. There's just one problem with it. Well, it's actually not a problem per se. Let's call it a question. I have just one question about it. And that question is, what is it doing in the monster book? We have encountered over the years a lot of creatures in monster books which are not really monsters. They're not hostile. They're not dangerous. They're just not even animals where it would be useful to have their stats. Like, it's nice to know what a horse's stats are, right? Because although horses aren't what you call monsters, they come up a lot. And it's in the book with all the other creature stats. I think we can let that one ride. But the Esperweed, like, the entry is kind of forced to point out that there's a combat stat section that is like, it's a flower? It doesn't fight. It's a piece of world building. I like it. I'm not against it, but I'm very curious about how it ended up here. Is it just that they didn't come up with the idea for it until they were done with the core book, and then, like, all the other books are adventures or something? It's so odd. Things in games do sometimes end up in the quote-unquote wrong book because, you know, sometimes you have an idea that doesn't really fit neatly into the structure that you've created for your game line. I get that. We can all think of crucial rules buried in obscure supplements. I always found it weirdly jarring that in Vampire the Masquerade 2nd Edition Revised, the rules for high-level disciplines were in the Guide to the Camarilla when they're available to anyone. Like, you don't have to be in the Camarilla to know these powers. And they're also so vanishingly rare in the game that dozens of pages of rules for them in a book that's ostensibly about something completely different seems like a real waste of time. But oh, well, these things happen. I'm sure people wanted those rules. If there's one thing I've learned over the years, it's that the way that I played Vampire is very different from how it was being played by a lot of people. But also, like, they got to go somewhere. And sometimes you just have a book with some room and you put them in there because you just don't have anywhere else to put them. There would be no perfect answer. There's not, like, a big book of advanced vampire powers. And there's not a big book of psychic plants for Dark Sun. But the oddity of it being in this book aside, the Esper Weed is pretty cool. I like it. It's a good piece of world building. It reinforces the themes of the setting, and you could do some interesting things with it. Although its rarity and the short duration of the powers, it is a little annoying that you have to kind of like rewrite the psionic section of a character for an effect that's only going to last for one turn. Next up we have the Flailer. The Flailer is a bit of an odd monster, maybe by way of being another not in Kansas anymore creature. So flailers are tortoise-like creatures with six legs. They have a stony brown shell, and that brown shell allows them to blend into the arid rocky landscape. They're ambush predators. They pull their legs in under their shells, and they lie down, and they wait for prey to come past. Indeed, they let their prey go past them, so I assume that they kind of hang out on tracks and trails. They let their prey go past them, and then they emerge from the shell to attack. And they run absolutely wild, swinging with their forelimbs, biting with their beak, and then attacking with their middle limbs. Each of these pairs of attacks, well, and the single attack from the bite, do a different damage die just to make things a little more complicated. Other than that, they're just a fight monster. If you kill a flailer, you could break up its hard shell and use it to make arrowheads, I guess, but the shell itself, although it is robust and provides good protection, because it's so hard, it can't really be reshaped from its big back of a turtle form, so you can't really use it as armor. Other than that, it's just a big tortoise that swings a frankly excessive five attacks around. So I called this a not in Kansas anymore monster, and I think that's probably true, especially if we define Kansas not as Kansas, but as like the Forgotten Realms or Greyhawk. Because when you set up camp in a traditional D&D game, you're concerned about being attacked by bandits or wolves or goblins. Now, those are threats in a game mechanical, tactical kind of sense, but aesthetically, they're markers of familiarity at this point. And the Flailer replaces them. It fits into the same travel is dangerous role as these monsters from conventional D&D, but it does so in a way that's different not only aesthetically, but actually in terms of the sort of rhythm of the fight, how the fight takes place, because there's not as many as I thought there were going to be. There are one or two Dark Sun creatures that are basically just, you know, goblins or what have you, but with like a leather jockstrap and a mohawk. But for the most part, no. Most of the Dark Sun monsters are mechanically different from their beard fantasy predecessors. And what that means is that the experience of fighting them could feel different. This is just reinforcing that thing about how I think Dark Sun is very much not meant to be anybody's first D&D. Like, I think a lot of the time this game gets its juice from the fact that it is so different from the other existing D&D settings. Anyway, the Flailer is fine. It fulfills that role of being a physical threat that makes travel dangerous without being just a reskinned goblin, and what more could you ask for? So that's about all the Athasian monsters we have time for today. In our next episode, we're going to be doing, well, actually, you know, I don't know what our next episode is going to be. We might be back in Athas, or it might be another listener-requested special episode, depending on the speed of my preparations. But either way, I hope that you will join me then for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster and is used under a Creative Commons attribution license. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.